Steve Kerr is a breath of fresh air for me because of his honesty. Him and I have been friends for many years. I think it's been well documented the problems he's had. As a player, I was very aware of all the things that were prescribed, and I questioned that. Well, if you take this, you'll feel better. No. What is that?
Rick Bucher. Bucher.
Right or wrong, the money that is being made in the perception of the public, you're getting paid millions to play a game. And so the perception is, it's the trade-off. Yes, if they're doing damage, they can't walk when they're 40 years old, but they made millions of dollars. And
walk.
Me, Joe Fan out there,
I deserve
I'm not making
that.
Millions of dollars.
I deserve it.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the latest episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. BJ just completed a deal, which we will talk about at some point. But in the meantime, congratulations. For those who may not know, BJ and Donatas Montiunas, his client, decided to throw a wrinkle in the whole restricted free agency game, where they went out and got an offer sheet. Rockets forced them to go out and get an offer sheet. Rockets did what they're allowed to do by the rules, is they matched that offer sheet. And then BJ and Donatas basically did the okey-doke and said, we're not ready to sign that offer sheet with you. We signed it with the Nets. So what else can you do for me? And for those listening to this, we'll know by the time that they're listening that the Rockets came back to the table. They adjusted it. Actually, both sides, and this is what happens in negotiations, both sides made some changes, but as I see it, the changes all benefit where Donatas was and where the position that BJ and Donatas took. So congratulations, my friend.
Well, thank you. It was respect to all of everyone that was involved, the Rocket, you know, Donatas. And so we were able to get something done. And, you know, in the end, let's get back to where the game belongs on the court. But it was hard fought, and it was a good going through the process, and we were able to get something done. So, again, you know, congratulations to Donatas, and let's get out there and start playing basketball.
Let's get to the first quarter and go around the league, starting with Klay Thompson dropping 60 points in 29 minutes.
How many? Say that again. Say it again,
60.
Rick.
Dropped 60 in 29 minutes, did it, and didn't even play in the third quarter. And he was sitting on the bench at one point with KD and Steph during that fourth quarter and said, you know what, man? I thought I could have got 70. And KD looked at him. Steph looked at him and said, dude, you missed like three butt-naked, wide-open three-pointers, and you got your layup blocked a couple times. You should have had 80 points. I have to ask you, BJ, you were a shooter in your own right. You saw one of the greatest dynamic scorers of all time, and Michael Jordan played alongside him, won three championships with him. There's KD. There's any number of guys who've been able to. James Harden. What makes Klay Thompson so unique and special?
Well, besides being a prototypical two guard, the thing that makes him very unique in this particular situation, and just look at this situation, Klay doesn't have to face a double team every single night. So that makes it very, very unique. I think he's not the first option. Some would argue he may not even be the second option.
Yeah.
Okay. But the thing that makes him very unique, which I'm most impressed with, the most impressive part of that 60 as I watched him was his teammates wanted him to get 80 if he could. That was the most impressive thing. I mean, this kid clearly was playing within the framework of the team, which is very important. But if you watch how excited the guys on the bench were, how excited the guys out there are playing with him, were trying to get him the ball, which made it very easy. I'm just very impressed with how this team, the Warriors, are playing a selfless basketball. Not only offensively, but defensively is where I see them. And I see this just as an indication of where they're at and their mindset at, because they're really becoming a defensive team, which we all said, or some of us said at the beginning, that they're just going to have to outscore you. No, defensively, this team is very good. And when you saw him get 60 points, he didn't do that alone. It wasn't like he was out there dribbling. He was just out there playing in the rhythm, playing in the flow of the game. And his teammates saw he had the hot hand and they kept feeding him.
Well, here's my question, though. If you put him on another team, if he was the first option, if he was a featured player, because I like his size, I think he's more than just a catch and shoot guy. I think he can put the ball on the floor. Maybe he's not going for 60, but could he be could he be a dynamic scorer? Would he be ranked? Would he be rivaling KD or James Harden or any other scorer in the league? I want to put Anthony Davis there. Would he rival them if he were on another team and he was more of the primary option?
I think he would. Without question, Klay is a top 10, top 15 performer in this league. I think he has shown that. I think the consistency at which he scores and which he plays, I think he's just a dynamic player. Just like moving from the head assistant to the head coach is only one seat, but that's a big jump. Going from the secondary scorer to the primary scorer is a big jump in this league. When every team in the league is focusing their defense to stop you, you have to come with a different mindset. But do I think he's capable of doing it? Yes. Would he have to change and put some more wrinkles in his game to adjust to how teams will be playing him? Yes. But I think talent-wise, he has the capability, he has the size, and most important, I mean, the kid has a short memory. I don't think Klay worries about any missed shot he gets, and I love that about him.
Yeah. Speaking of Klay, the Warriors just played the Clippers. This was supposed to be a big showdown. This was supposed to be a rivalry game. It wasn't any of that. And by the way, just for the sake of a historic note, the Warriors swept the Clippers last year. So maybe we had the wrong expectation, but Clippers have played great defense this year. Most Bates, who played for the Warriors previously, said that the Clippers are on the refs too much. And that was certainly a feeling that the Warriors had, the people around the league, Doc Rivers, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, that they all just are way too much involved with chirping at the referees and contesting every call. Is that the heart? When you look at what most Bates' criticism is, do you think that's at the heart of why the Clippers at times look like they're a title contending team and yet have not been able to make good on that promise?
Well, I mean, we can dance around the question and say, well, if the Clippers leave the referees alone, it's a different outcome. Okay, what is it? Coach Denny Green, who said we are who we are?
Well, they are who we thought they were.
But let me say this. I was at that game. The Warriors are a better team than the Clippers. We can dance around all these other things. And I think the Clippers now are faced with this question. What can we do? What adjustments can we do to counter that if we see them in a 7-game series? It's just very simple. Sometimes you have to admit that a team is better than you. I remember facing this same identical question when I was in Chicago, and we had to face the Detroit Pistons were a better team than we were. And what could we do to counter that? So I think right now the mirror has been held up to the Clippers. They can talk about the referees. They can talk about all these different things. When that game starts, the Warriors and company, they bring it. And they brought it on the defensive end. And I'm not talking about they were hot or they just played a good game and we played. No, defensively, they shut the Clippers down. Okay, they shut them down. And that goes right back. That goes immediately to the matchups of the game. They are a better team right now.
Last possession of the second quarter. We got 24 seconds on the clock. Doc Rivers troubles me. I've always been, for the most part, a Doc Rivers fan. And I almost feel as if something has changed. I don't know whether it's the authority he's been given with the Clippers. I don't know if it's the team he's dealing with. But when he said, hey, this isn't a rivalry, and if there's a rivalry, we beat them in 7 games, you know, when we saw them in the playoffs a couple of years ago. So if anybody has the advantage, we have the advantage. There's just so many things that Doc's saying that hit my ear wrong and seem to be contrary to the Doc Rivers that I once knew, who seemed to push all the right buttons back when he was in Boston. Are you seeing the same thing? Or what is your take on the Doc Rivers that you're seeing and the way that he's leading the Clippers?
My bigger question is, what is he supposed to say? He's definitely not going to say they're a better team than us. He has to find something that's going to allow his guys to say, maybe. He's searching right now because right now, over the last 2 years, the Warriors have their number. They have their number on the road. They have their number at home. Right. They have their number.
So why can't we say that? Why are we going back to we beat them in a 7-game series 2 years ago?
As an athlete, as a competitor, you will never admit to defeat. And Doc Rivers right now knows, he knows whether it's right or wrong, he knows that if they show up, there is a possibility they could win. And all it takes is, you know, crazier things have happened. I mean, you got to play the game. So give him the credit for he's going to keep showing up. He's not going to admit to defeat. But I agree right now. The Warriors have their number.
They got bounced by the Blazers last year in the first round, and they had a 3-1 lead on the Rockets 2 years ago and ended up giving that up. Anything can happen. Unfortunately for the Clippers of late, it's not the thing that you want to have happen if you're a Clippers fan. Let's go to the second quarter. NBA madness. Matt Barnes and DeMarcus Cousins are being jointly sued after reportedly assaulting a young couple at the Chelsea nightclub in Manhattan, New York. This was after they played the Knicks. I believe they beat the Knicks that night. Barnes is accused of allegedly choking a young lady. Both Barnes and Boogie are accused of punching and kicking the young woman's date. There was video of them afterward. This is the question that I have for you, my NBA sage. The video shows that it must have been like about 6 a.m., maybe 7 a.m., when they're rolling out of the club. Now, I know there was a time where guys burn the candle at both ends. I'm sure there are times where they still do. When you are DeMarcus Cousins, the best player on the team, and Matt Barnes, who, you know, you can, whatever you want to say, he's a veteran on that team. Is this just, you know what, we happen to catch video of something that guys do all the time? How unique, this is what I'm asking, for, let's put aside what happened and what's going to happen legally. How unique is it that you'd have two players like them rolling out of a club at 6, 7 a.m.?
How often unique, does it happen?
Is this...
I don't have a... I can't like say...
How often did it happen in your day? Did it
I'm
happen?
Not going to kiss and tell, Rick. Yes, it did. It has happened. I've been there, done that. Now, the alleged things that were alleged, that's more... I'm more concerned about what really happened. What are the facts? Before I can comment about it, I just want to know what really happened, because now there's allegedly this happened, that happened. There's video with them walking out of a club. Okay, so... What's wrong with that? He walked out of a club.
Well,
at 6
the big deal
okay,
is,
big deal.
If you're Matt Barnes and you had your issues with Derek Fisher, I mean, I can see where this is happening. I would be shocked if Derek Fisher's name didn't come up. What is the nothing good? Who was the? There was a coach who said nothing good ever happens like after midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever. I guarantee you, it sure as hell good doesn't happen. Walking out of a club at 6, 7 a.m. You're almost asking for it if you're Matt Barnes putting yourself in that position. And I hate to say, look, it's a free country. Everybody should be allowed to do whatever they want, except if you're Matt Barnes and you're in New York and you're coming out of a club at 6 a.m. Don't you have to know
everyone
better?
Excluding Matt Barnes? Is that the new rule? Is that going to be implemented on the BJ and the Bucher show? Matt Barnes can do what they want, right?
Pretty much. We may add people to the list, but we're going to start there. We're starting it right now. Matt Barnes, you can't do anything that you want. There are certain things you cannot do. Walking out of a club at 6 a.m.
That has to be the new
one
rule.
Of them. And by the way, DeMarcus, you're on the watch list too. We're not putting you on. We're not writing you down. Yeah. We're just letting you know we're our eyes are on you. We're here. Okay.
All right. Well, I mean, like I said, I don't know what happened.
Look, BJ, no.
Yeah, I know. I know.
BJ, don't give no political.
I'm not giving
answers.
A political. I'm not giving a political.
I'm a BJ. If you was these guys' agent, you dealt with them on a regular. Like, what kind of advice would you give them about this kind of stuff, man? Because Matt Barnes and DeMarcus Cousins, they're not rookies, man. They've been in this league long enough to know that nothing good happened. I mean, you can go back to Tabo Cephalosha getting done up by the police in New York.
Might have been the same
with
club.
The same type of situation. Like, what advice would you give these guys,
well,
man?
Well, the thing that I give my clients that I work with, like, fact, young guys, myself included, maybe with the exception of Rick, are going to go out and enjoy themselves.
Dude, are you
especially
kidding me?
In a city.
I would have made the papers. I would have made TMZ. Yeah. TMZ would have had a dedicated reporter assigned to me.
Yeah, these are facts, okay? They're going to go out. So I accept that. I accept that now at my age, and I accept that then. Now, once you accept the fact that they're going to go out, what can we do to prevent this? I haven't seen all of the video, all of the footage, but the one thing that I encourage with every one of my clients is to make sure that you have the proper security and measures that you need to make sure that we can avoid situations like this. There are people that are professional that get paid to do these.
So this has more to do with the organization than it does.
No. This has to do with the people that we're discussing, DeMarcus Cousins and Matt Barnes. to make sure, because things happen. And you and I can go about all of this and say, you know, I'm going to go out to a club and have a good time. But the reality of it is there are things that people are doing. There are people have agendas, hidden agendas. And we just want to make sure that we protect ourselves if that comes up. So I encourage those guys to do that and make sure you have the proper security and take the proper steps necessary for this not to happen.
Yeah, because I've been in clubs with celebrities, man, and been a part of that whole thing and watched how some people, you know, just everyday people who are just so happen to be in the club, because they hate that you are where you are, they purposely try to start stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with guys like Matt Barnes, with the history that he has, and DeMarcus Cousins, with the history that he has in terms of the personalities, it's so easy to get them
easy
off.
Target. So yeah, it's easy. I'm not target. Taking any sides, but what I got to get the information. I'm not buying that just happened because they said it. If that happened to me, I'm not just providing that information to a network. So let me find out what happened.
Look,
but again, what was done to prevent this from happening? Because we know that young people are going to go out, and young people in this case, where they are targets.
But they know they're targets, and this is the same as social media. Where are you going to go back at somebody? You know they're coming at you. That you know that they're just trying to, I don't know, get either satisfaction. Who knows? Who knows what they're trying? What their motive is? But you know it's coming, and so. Can't you take preventive measures and don't, I hate the line, and I hear it from young players all the time. Well, hey, man, I just want to live my life. It's not fair that I can't do what everybody else does. You know what? Here's the reality. You're in a different sphere. You're making money. You're a celebrity. You're not like everybody else. That's just the reality.
Right. You know what I respect about Matt Barnes is every time I see Matt Barnes, he's always by himself. I respect that, Rick Bucher. Yeah, this guy is not running. He's not hiding. And he's always by himself.
Well, he wasn't this time. Boogie Cousins came along for the ride.
But you don't see him you don't see him out doing things like, you know, in groups and doing all these different.
Maybe that's because he scares people.
I don't
know. Right.
I respect that about him. I respect that then. I respect it now. So for me, all right, let's find out what happened. That's where I'm at with that. I don't know how this is going to play out, but let's find out what really happened. And then once we get the facts, Rick Bucher, then we can make a comment because, you know, maybe you were there. I wasn't there, though. So I can't give my full assessment. So I can't really comment about this other than, all right, you and I, well, I was at home sleeping. I don't know where Rick is at. You know, I don't know.
I feel like I was there because I was in that situation enough times.
I can
pretty much imagine how that went down. I don't have the exact thing. Right. And by the way, your appreciation of Matt Barnes for being a lone wolf says as much about you as it says about Matt Barnes.
I don't really know Matt like that, but every time I see him, he's always alone and he's always great. He's always great.
People don't realize, but they're finding out there's a little bit of Matt Barnes and BJ Armstrong. You may not have known that before. Hey, by the way, for both you and Matt, we're going to have a little halftime entertainment.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. Hope you like today's entertainment, which is provided by Talib Kweli, and this is his song, Just to Get By.
Yeah. We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. We smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. Work till we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone. To get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We commute the computer, spirits stay mute while your ego spread rumors. We survivalists turn to consumers. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. You ask the why some people gotta live in the trailer, cause like a sailor, I paint a picture with a pen like Norman Mailer. Me and Wella raised three daughters all by herself with no help. I think about the struggle and I find the strength of myself. These words melt in my mouth, they hot like the jail cell in the south before my nigga core bailed me out. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. Do or die like Best Style, see the red sky out the window of the red eye, let the lead fly, some G-Rap shit, living the lead dial. smoke trees and we stay strong. Yo, our activism attacking the system. The blacks and Latins in prison, numbers in prison, they victim black in the vision. Shit, and all they got is rapping to listen to. I let them know we missing you. Your love is unconditional. Even when the condition is critical, when the living is miserable, your position is pivotal. I ain't bulls. I'm in you now. Why would I lie? Just to get by, just to get by, get fly. The TV got us reaching for stars, not the ones between Venus and Mars. The ones to be reading for parts. The people get breath and hands with their penis and larger. Saturday, Sunday, Sunday morning at the feet of the Father. They need something to rely on. We get high on all types of drugs.
All right, here we are again, the beginning of the second half, the third quarter, and you know what that means. It's time to test the trivia knowledge of myself and BJ Armstrong. By the way, BJ, I don't remember seeing you having retweeted you getting beaned by me as a result of having won last week's trivia. I'm sure that I just missed it and that you did put it out there.
You're absolutely right, Rick. That is, I'm taking responsibility for that. I did not retweet that. I will have that up though. I will have.
Yeah. Well, you're going to hopefully have to put two in a row out. So here we go. On June 6th, 1946, the Basketball Association of America, that's the BAA, was born. The league then hosting its first game on November 1st, 1946. Which two teams played what is now known as the first ever professional basketball game in association with the NBA? Was it the New York Knickerbockers, the Minneapolis Lakers, the Baltimore Bullets, and or the Toronto Huskies? Which two of those four teams? Knickerbockers of New York, Minneapolis Lakers, Baltimore Bullets, Toronto Huskies.
I'm going to say the Toronto Huskies.
And you have to pick two. And who did they play?
I'm going to say the Toronto Huskies.
Man, the wheels are turning.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say the Minneapolis Lakers. I'm just going to say that. But I'm guessing. The Minneapolis Lakers. The Knicks.
That is correct. New York Knickerbockers and the Toronto Huskies.
Yeah. All right.
And by the way, the Knicks won that game 68-66. Klay Thompson's great-great-grandfather had... No, he didn't.
All right. This player broke the NBA color barrier by becoming the first non-Caucasian to play in an NBA game. A, Chuck Cooper. B, Watura Masaka. C, Reese Tatum. D, Bison Dele.
I like the late Bison Dele reference. Now the interesting is throwing the Asian element in there. And when did he first play? Oh man, Shane Freeman, our producer, I hate you. I hate you.
Don't be hating.
Oh.
I'm gonna go with Chuck Cooper though. Damn it.
Watura Masaka.
Ah, it's damn it. I should have gone. Dude. I knew it was a trick question. Damn.
I had no idea.
Hey, BJ, read that fun fact to him real quick.
As a member of the New York Knicks during the 1947-48 season, this Japanese-American became the first non-white player in the NBA.
Damn it.
That's really good.
That is really good. I hate you, Shane. It was really good.
Good job, Shane. Here's another connection to you, Rick, is that this guy actually played for the Utah Utes. And that team actually won the 1944 NCAA championship by beating your alma mater, Dartmouth, in overtime.
Wow. So there was a time where we did know how to play ball.
Right.
Wow. That's good to know. Good knowledge. All right. This was the first back-to-back championship team in the NBA. Minneapolis Lakers, Boston Celtics, New York Knicks, or Baltimore Bullets?
Lakers.
That's way too easy. George Mikan, of course.
George.
Led by the legendary center George Mikan, the Lakers became the NBA's first back-to-back title winners, snagging the 1949 and 1950 championships. Can you tell me who was the next best big man during that era? The guy who... I'll even tell you...
Oh, my God. Don't tell me. Johnny Red Kerr.
No, I'm not going to go there. I wasn't going to go there. Bob Pettit. Because I think Bob Pettit competed with George Mikan for league MVP, played for St. Louis.
Johnny Red Kerr. Johnny from the Syracuse team. I can't even think of their name. The Syracuse something. All right. On October 12th, 1979, this Boston Celtics guard is widely known as the first NBA player to score a three-point basket. A, Chris Ford. B, Larry Bird. C, Jeff Judkins. Or D, Tiny Archibald.
Three-point shot. What is it? Say it again. Say what's the first part?
This player is widely known as the first NBA player to score a three-point basket.
Again, here we go with the trick question.
Why they got to be trick? Why they got to be trick, Rick?
The damn trick questions. We just give you the straight up, who is the back-to-back first NBA champions, and away you go. Three-point basket. Give me the options again. Oh, give me the four names.
Chris Ford, B, Larry Bird, C, Jeff Judkins, D, Tiny Archibald.
I don't even remember Jeff, and it's probably going to be him because I don't remember him. But I'm going to go with Chris Ford.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, pulled that one out of my...
In that game against the Houston Rockets at the Boston Garden, Chris Ford scored the first ever NBA three-pointer to help the Celtics win 114-106.
Nice. I believe that's a tie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, Shane.
All right, here we go. Again, Jeopardy rules. The first person to answer correctly wins. All right, so in 1955, this person won the NBA's first ever MVP trophy.
Say that again. Hold on. In 1955.
1955. Don't look it up.
Yeah, don't look it up. Don't cheating.
A, Bob Cousy. B, Bob Pettit. C, Bill Sharman. Or D, Paul Arizin.
I'm going to say Cousy.
I'm going to go Pettit.
Man, Rick, you on a roll. Rick got that one. It's Bob Pettit.
Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Get that meme ready. Get that retweet finger ready, BJ. You have some work to do.
Ooh, I got two. That's pretty good.
Man, pretty soon we're going to be doing a best of. Best of Buker beatdowns of BJ and trivia.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, don't wait for that.
That's pretty funny.
All right, it's fourth quarter, and this is where we just break out and give our opinion. Not that we're not giving you our take throughout the show, but this is someone near and dear to your heart. Actually, two guys that you know extremely well. Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony. And of course, the topic that just follows Phil Jackson around like a, I don't know, like a lost puppy. The triangle. Playing the triangle.
So
the latest is that Phil Jackson was asked about Carmelo Anthony and said a couple of complimentary things, said, I think he's a good person. I think that's worth noting considering that Carmelo Anthony's character and behavior has sometimes been put into question. Phil Jackson's been there for a little bit and says, I do think he's a good person. Also said, I think he's the kind of type of player who could play and thrive in the triangle. He could be like Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. Those are great comparisons, and it's a compliment to Carmelo that Phil would make those comparisons, especially now because people question what just how good Carmelo is at this stage. However, he also added he has to stop. You know, we have this rule, as everybody in basketball who's played. Look, 1-2, metronome on your head, make a decision. You're either passing it, you're attacking, you're going to make a decision in 2, maybe at most 3 seconds. Carmelo has a tendency to hold it 3, 4, 5. Phil Jackson pointed this out. That's what everybody focused on. Here's my question. The veracity of it is here. You're not going to argue. That is true about Carmelo. It's a habit that the Knicks would be better served if he got out of it. Am I good so far, BJ? Do you have any issue with that?
I follow you. Okay. I follow you.
Here's my big question. The Knicks, for the first time in, since the 2012-2013 season, were 3 games over .500. As BJ likes to say, let me say that again. First time since the 2012-2013 season, they're 3 games over .500. They have, aside from the beatdown by the Cavs the other night, have made Madison Square Garden a place that is formidable for teams to come in and try to beat the Knicks.
Yes.
Everything seems to be rolling in the right direction.
Yes.
Carmelo even is not holding the ball as much as he did in previous iterations.
Yes.
Why does Phil have to go here now? What is the benefit? What's the advantage? What's the goal in talking about Carmelo's tendency to hold the ball now when everything seems to be going so well?
Well, you know, this is a very tricky question for me because I know both people and I happen to know both people fairly well. You know, in playing for Phil Jackson, Phil is all about progress and making progress. No one stands still. What you did yesterday, that was yesterday. Now, what can we do to move forward as people? What can we do to move forward as a team? Phil has always used the media to get his points yep. across. Rick, you've covered him for many years. I've played for him. I've known him for many years. And I've always found it amusing that Phil uses the media. He throws things out there, walks away, and then we play with it.
Look at you using that "we," by the way. We, yeah, the media.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. You know, he's strategically, he's one with Michael Jordan. Was that an accident that he said that? He's one with Kobe Bryant. Is it an accident that he said that? I don't think so.
Right.
But what he was able to accomplish with those two players, both of those players, Hall of Fame players, were to get them to play at a pace mm-hmm. that everyone can benefit from because the ball moves faster than the people.
Right.
So if we can get Carmelo to score just a little faster, mm-hmm. everyone benefits. We're not trying to change Carmelo. I'm just hopefully if he ever listens or someone, instead of scoring in 3 or 4 seconds, score in 2 seconds. The one thing about Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, if you watch them and you break the tape down, those guys learned how to score in less than 3 dribbles before the defense could actually get to them.
Right.
And they figured out how to manipulate the triangle offense.
Right.
To counter everything you could do defensively so that they wouldn't have to hold the ball for longer times. Now, he's challenging Carmelo. You and I had this conversation. Carmelo is, in my estimate, a top player still in this league offensively. Mm-hmm. He can score that ball. I've been watching this kid score that ball since he's been in high school.
Yeah.
Now, can he figure out a way to do it with pace to it? Now, that to me is his next growth, because if he does that, that improves their chances to win, which is the goal here.
All right.
This is the goal. So I've seen Phil do this many times. I hope that everyone understands what's being said here, because Carmelo, I want to make this very clear, is a special talent on the offensive end. And now it's time for everyone to move to the next step, because as you stated, now they are 3 games or so over 500 for the first time in quite some time.
Right. But we're talking about talent, and talent, I agree with you. He can be the scorer. I mean, I could almost make a case that Carmelo has the innate ability, both inside and outside, to be a better scorer than either of those other two guys.
Oh, man,
because
man.
Of his size and his range and his jump shot, which is he has limitless range when it comes to that. But here's the thing. Is he of the same mindset? Does he have the same mental approach where he will take this in the right vein? Because we saw Michael and Kobe, they might have taken issue with it, like, what the hell you like, but you knew they weren't going to be insulted. They were going to be infuriated and want to prove, Phil, yes, I can do that. Will Carmelo, because you know him, will he take it in the same vein? Do you need to approach him different? Is this the best approach?
I've never been a teammate of Carmelo, and I've never coached Carmelo, but I know Carmelo is very, very headstrong, and he's a very prideful man, as all great players are. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds, but I think these other two guys, you know, they're fighters. Carmelo is a fighter at heart. What is he going to do? Back away from the challenge? I don't think so. I've never seen this kid back away from a challenge.
Okay.
And if I know Carmelo, kid from Baltimore, okay, this kid is going to be in the foxhole with those other guys that suit up with him every night.
I just wonder whether, and this is not the first time that Phil has made a comment, I wonder whether Phil has something against the Banana Boat crew. Because he went after LeBron James and mentioned the posse, and then now he's going after Carmelo and suggesting that he's a ball hog. I mean, come on, Phil.
I don't think he's suggesting that. What Phil is doing is merely, as great as Michael Jordan was as a player, once Michael Jordan figured out his role on the team, Everyone has a role. A player's biggest challenge is accepting his role on the team. That's my job. And that's your biggest challenge as a player, is to accept your role on the team. Michael Jordan's role wasn't to play basketball. His role was to win the game. My job was to play the game. I could play the game for 44 minutes. Then it was my job to make sure the last 4 minutes of the game, I gave it to Michael Jordan so he could win the game.
Right.
Kobe Bryant, once he figured out that his job was to win the game, he stopped playing the game. Melo, if you're listening, your job now is to win the game. Winning covers a multitude of sins. Every team in the league has the same problems, except winning covers it all up. So once we have all of those things, Rick Bucher and the rest of us will say, oh man, they pushed all the right buttons. Great coaching, great motivation, whatever it is. Winning will cover everything up. So let's see how he responds. And I already know how he's going to respond. Melo is going to do what Melo is going to do, which he's going to score that ball. So let's see how he can do it and help this team win.
Well, I'm just I'm just thankful that I get to be part of your posse. I mean, your entourage. I mean, that we're business associates. Hey, that we're business associates.
You're part of my cabinet members. I like to refer to them.
you're part of my cabinet members.
You know what I mean?
Let's dress it up. That's I like it. We are out of time. Thank you again for joining us here on the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. If you're listening from iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show so that you don't miss a single episode, and rate and leave a review. You can talk bad about us if you want. We'd love to hear what you have to think, good or bad. And also check out the brand new website, bjandandbucher.com. We're going to have a bunch of stuff on there as well. It goes above and beyond what we provide. And who knows, might have a chance to win some tickets, since that's what we do here too. You can also follow our Twitter page at bjandbucher. BJ, as always, a pleasure and a privilege. Shane, thanks for getting it done on the board. We'll talk to you guys again next week.